Welcome to the Hollywood Outsider, an award-winning weekly entertainment podcast. This week, it's the Tom Cruise Effect. Why is he the last movie star standing? And why is he also somehow so polarizing, yet his movies kick ass? Also, what is the most impossible mission in movies or TV? Not necessarily Mission Impossible movies, just the most impossible missions in movies or TV. And spoilers are everywhere. Plus, our reviews of The Unseen, The Channel, and Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part 1. Let's get on with the show. My name is Aaron Peterson. Joining me today are my fellow host, John Davenport.
Hey, buddy. How you doing today?
Wonderful. Amanda Sink.
Hello, hello.
Troy Heinrichs.
What's up, everybody?
Not much. We are back. I didn't get a week off, but you guys took a week off. So how was that?
It was great. I watched things blow up from my house. It was nice. I didn't leave.
Fireworks, or was there a terrorist operation?
This day of, the world status, you have to be very specific in how you define things blowing up at your house.
Let me clarify. Yes. Mm-hmm. Fireworks. I watched the fireworks mm-hmm. with the Rocky Mountains as my silhouette in the background.
That's very sweet. Mm-hmm. That's very sweet. I didn't watch any fireworks this year. I just didn't care.
A lot of them are going to these LED drone things. John could start making money.
What is an LED drone thing? I don't know what you're talking
about. They do a drone show.
A drone show?
Mm-hmm. Instead of fireworks.
Like a bunch of drones light up and then fly around each other?
Yep. Mm-hmm. They do this whole thing where they pre-program different designs and whatnot into the drone systems, and they fly around each other to create shapes or to, just do incredible things. It's actually, figure the scene in Lord of the Rings when we first meet Gandalf and he shows up for the party, and sure, then you have all the different.
I don't remember drones there. That would have been weird. They could have just taken that drone and dropped that ring off, right?
Right. Well, they could have done that. However,
could you imagine?
I'm talking more about like the fireworks show that Gandalf did.
Gotcha. Okay. I still think drones would have made that movie so much quicker. God, it wouldn't have been 16 hours.
Yeah, the second one would have not even existed because that was all walking.
All three of them were all walking. There's so much walking. Remember, you can always find more information at thehollywoodoutsider.com. I just want to mention that. But also, podcast awards are out, and that's where listeners actually nominate their favorite podcast. So if you go to, I'm going to make this easy, podcastawards.com, we're in the category of entertainment. The Blacklist Exposed is in TV and film, and we're also in People's Choice. So if you could nominate The Hollywood Outsider in entertainment, the Blacklist Exposed in TV and film, and also The Hollywood Outsider for People's Choice, that would be great. Podcastawards.com. You just go there and use every email address you have. Every single one of them. I don't care. And you can also nominate Packers Fan Podcast for sports and The Gaming Outsider for games. There you go. I wanted to make a cheap and easy plug. I appreciate it. I know we've talked about it before, but I wanted to hit that one more time. It's only in July, so it's got to get it done before the end of the month. So if you could, that would help the podcast out greatly, and we would appreciate it. I would appreciate it, apparently. These guys
Hoorah!
Don't care. Yeah, that's a little delayed. A little late. A little late. Yep. Energy sucks here. We can really bring this up. I don't feel like we deserve an award just yet.
We were trying to not distract the people that were immediately going to do it right now by just screaming in their ears.
We should just wait? Hang on. Hold tight, hey, guys.
Pause.
We should walk them through it. So when you go to the website, you're going to want to scroll down.
No. I do want to say, next week, we're going to talk a little bit about TV series finales, because Troy and I have already seen the Blacklist series finale, but we can't talk about it yet because it hasn't aired yet. So next week, we can dive into that a little bit. But I'm just going to say nothing. Not a damn thing.
Nope. Sworn to secrecy.
10 freaking years, man. We've been doing that. You've been doing
that.
Am I
missing something on the format?
No, that just came out of my ass just now.
Okay. All right. Yeah. I was feeling a little unprepared, but I'm glad that I was extra prepared, that I knew that that wasn't on the format.
Yeah, he was just pontificating so more people could fill out their award nomination before we got into the actual content.
What feels good is when you ask in the middle of the podcast, just, in case I need to edit
just
something
clarifying
else.
Questions.
Yep. It's always good. It's going to be there.
Just so, leave it.
So I'll move on. Can we just discuss? This is on the format, Amanda, if you see. This is the
I know.
Thing.
Clearly, I've been reading it.
Yep. Before we talk about the cruise missile, can we just talk about how there's like so few surprises in entertainment anymore? Because Deadpool 3 has literally already spoiled the Wolverine's costume, which would have been badass to not see ahead of time. And yeah, we shared it because everyone else has shared it. But the cameos, we did not share any of those. And spoiled all the a bunch of cameos that are going to be in it. And this happens over and over because outlets are desperate for news coverage. And I just want to know, do you guys even care about being surprised anymore? Do you just give up? Where are we at? Because I'm kind of done even trying at this point.
No, I just took my headphones off because I didn't know what you were going to say. So I didn't want to be spoiled.
It's literally in the format that you said you read. So
I did, what I just said. Obviously I skimmed over that part. So
I didn't spoil anything.
Okay. I just didn't know if you were gonna. So I'm just validating that, yes, it is a concern for me.
Ryan Reynolds is in it. Spoiler alert.
Ooh, thank you. Yeah. I like that. Mm-hmm. But also,
the title of the movie's called Deadpool 3. Spoiler alert.
God damn it, you guys. Could you not? I was waiting for that.
It's going to be produced by Disney now. That's a spoiler. Not Fox.
I do try to avoid like trailers and things like that because I just don't want that risk. And I feel like too much is given away these days. I appreciate the surprises.
Yeah, I'm with you. I appreciate the surprises. I've been a long time no trailer kind of person for a while. So I try not to watch as many trailers as they put out there. And I do the best I can to not read as many articles, but it's kind of hard to miss that picture when it shows up. So, yeah.
I think that solution is just stop, like we've stopped doing like actual broadcast news or news that affects people's lives because it's all doom and gloom. We just have to stop watching entertainment news as well. Because I didn't know this was actually happening until Aaron mentioned it right now. And I usually peruse my normal flair of entertainment news. So maybe less Twitter, maybe less threads in your lives would probably be a better thing for y'all.
I don't get spoiled from trailers, man. I don't. Everybody freaks out about trailers. I very rarely have been spoiled with trailers. It's usually entertainment news, which I do peruse because they are desperate for content. And now we're at the point where Dua Lipa, she's got a see-through outfit. Let's put that. And don't get me wrong. Thank you, guys.
But yeah, I was going to say, I don't think most of us are opposed to that.
Not complaining. Just saying, you know, I would like to have some surprises from some things. And
that's how I got spoiled for a certain movie that just came out recently.
Which one?
I'm not saying it, so I don't spoil it for other people.
You can say the movie, jackass. You don't have to say what the spoiler was. Can you not make yourself do that?
No hard feelings.
Oh, I know what he's talking about.
Is it because she's naked? Because she put that in everywhere she went. Every interview that came up.
I think that, let's be honest, I think that may be more of a selling point to go see it rather than a dissuasion.
Doesn't hurt.
Which is my devil's advocate for the whole thing. It's that in the world that we live in today, for the attention of eyeballs in many, many, many different places, some things like this you're going to have to spoil because that's the only thing that's going to draw people to come see the thing. I mean, because clearly the name alone isn't doing justice, right? Flash and Indiana Jones, yeah. Tanking at the box office, that's right? You could crazy. Spoil the whole movie and it's still in the toilet, right?
Isn't it wild that both of those didn't do it? And I still say Indiana Jones flopping had more to do with them debuting it at Cannes than anything else. That and Crystal Skull, I think, obviously left a bad taste in a lot of people's mouths, for sure. But debuting it at Cannes and getting all that bad press, I feel like it just turned people completely off because people were excited about it until it debuted and all that negative press came. And then it's kind of come too late. All the positive press came too late.
But I think it's going to have the Titanic effect, potentially maybe the Ratatouille effect.
I don't think so. That movie's almost done.
People see it, it'll grow eventually and they'll make the money up in the home release and they will at the box office release. Potentially.
Home release, possibly, because what I was gonna say is that I kind of wonder if this is just the future box office.
You shut your mouth. We're still gonna have our mega hits.
Well, not that that's good. I know she's saying that it's not gonna go to a movie theater. I'm saying like the weekend box office take of the first weekend is not the metric anymore.
Yeah, no, and that's not what she meant though. I think.
No, yeah. I mean, that's a good point. That is a good point. And I will definitely claim credit for it, if you know. But no, more so that, is this the future of movie theaters where people really just aren't going? Like, if you consider the economy, people aren't clearly aren't spending their money there.
Not necessarily true. They're spending their money, just not on those mega blockbusters. The budgets are way too big to justify it. $300 million for an Indiana Jones movie? What is this, Star Wars? Stop it. It's ridiculous. The Flash, you've got a property that's never had a standout property at all, and you're giving that like $300 million or whatever it was. I mean, that's ridiculous too. And obviously Justice League proved that there was a, you know, it's kind of struggling there to make the money back. I think a lot of it has to do with budgets, because Insidious 12 or whatever the hell that number was, that made $32 million. That Sound of Freedom, which is what, I don't know, it's a QAnon movie, I think. I don't even know.
Yeah, it's a QAnon movie.
But that's
a total propaganda movie.
It's got like $40 million, and actually I kind of want to see it. So sometimes, and I think it's just about what people want to sell.
To bring it back around to the whole topic, they had to spoil that Michael Keaton was in The Flash in order to get people to go see The Flash.
But nobody went and saw The Flash, so did that work?
So the reason not. I went and saw The Flash in the theater.
I hear what you're saying, Aaron, but I also think that even Indiana Jones before, in different times, after Crystal Skull, probably would have done better. The Flash.
Maybe.
I feel like...
I don't think The Flash would have done better. I think The Flash was ruined because James Gunn went out and said DC's scrapped. And to me... I know a lot of people that said, Ezra Miller is definitely a butthead. I know a lot of people that said, why would I bother? It doesn't matter anymore. They're starting over. So I get that. It's kind of hard to get hyped about something that's dead in their minds.
And Indiana Jones, some people actually really good.
Some people thought Harrison Ford was dead. So I could see that connection. You
know? I mean,
nice.
Just kidding. And the sad part is,
run, I'd wonder too.
And that movie's very good. Excellent. Anyway, you can listen to a whole podcast about it. Mm-hmm. You know what else was very good? Transformers. And if you're looking for fun reinvention of nostalgia, like we've talked about with these past properties, you can get Transformers Rise of the Beast on digital today. Optimus Prime and the Autobots team up with a powerful faction of Transformers known as the Maximals to save Earth in this adrenaline-fueled adventure. You can buy or rent Transformers Rise of the Beast on digital today, and get over an hour of bonus content when you buy it on digital, and it's available at all participating retailers. It's rated PG-13 from Paramount. And I got to say, we didn't talk about that one on the show, but I really enjoyed it. I think it's right up there with Bumblebee, which I loved. It's a real return to form with Transformers, and I really can't wait to see where they're going, because I think they're back on track with these movies. I mean, I'm fun again.
Yeah, I'm really excited to be able to sit down and finally see it. I didn't get a chance to see it because we were on the cruise when it came out, and I just haven't been able to get around between the cruise, getting sick, running to North Carolina. So I'm excited to really see it because I have heard things. I've heard other things from other friends, which they would say, you cannot pay me to go see The Flash again, but I will definitely go see Transformers again.
Yeah, definitely recommend it. Highly recommend it. And also, if you want to support the show, you can go to patreon.com/thehollywoodoutsider. That's patreon.com/thehollywoodoutsider. We have bonus episodes every month for supporters, including our bad movie night, which is we look at a movie that critics or fans think is a bad movie, but we think is actually pretty good. And we actually did Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull last. It's interesting. It's an interesting discussion. Now, I want to get into our From the Outside In topic. We're talking about Tom Cruise. That's right. Just Tom Cruise. That's our topic. He's an enigma. He's a puzzle wrapped in a riddle. And people love him. People hate him. Everything in between. He's the very last movie star standing. I think it's really hard to debate that anymore. It used to be, you know, you had guys you could pick out left and right.
Harrison Ford used to be one of them.
Yeah. Why you got to be throwing shots at Harrison Ford?
It's recent. You need to back it's up. It's recent. You need to back it up. It's recent. Hey,
so she's going to be throwing a lot of shots at Tom Cruise for the next 45 minutes to half hour, if not even the entire hour. So let's just keep it under control. Okay.
All right. He's been in Scientology for eons. And I think we can all agree that's pretty much nonsense, right? We all agree on that?
Yeah.
It's nonsense that people talk about.
They're super cool with killing people. So, yeah.
Easy. Easy.
I'm just saying.
Unless you have proof of that, I don't want to hear about it.
They literally have. Yes, they've sent out documents. You can see the documents that they've gotten from inside. I actually read them in a religion class because I reviewed all the different religions. And they have documents that were leaked that state basically that they're okay with that if someone violates their codes.
Okay. Well, let's move on from that.
Anyway.
But I guess I can ask, like, is that what bothers you? If you're not a fan, why not? If you are a fan, why? We just want to talk about the cruise missile, the Tom Cruise effect, if you will. So, Amanda, you were, I will say, well noted as being a Tom Cruise non-fan. You have liked some of his movies, but you are just not a fan of the actor. You feel like, well, why don't you tell me what first made you aware of Tom Cruise? I'm speaking for you. I shouldn't.
I can't remember the first thing that I watched with him in it, but it was one of his movies from the 90s. It wasn't Top Gun
in the
80s.
Yeah,
it wasn't that one that gave me my first introduction to him, nor was it his later franchises that kind of, I would say, escalated his career. Because now
so young.
I would say...
So young. So young.
No, but if you think about what has propelled his career, it's these franchises.
No, it isn't.
That is still keeping him alive to this day.
You said propelled his career. His career. Yeah. I'm just correcting matter of fact.
I understand that his career
been a
was
massive
made
movie
long
star
time ago
since the 80s.
I'm not debating that.
I mean, he has so many hit movies, it's mind-boggling. And most of them are not franchise films, believe it or not.
What I'm trying to say, and maybe I'm using the wrong words because I don't disagree with you. I know he's had a massive career. It's known. What I'm trying to say is what has maintained his celebrity, his fame, his career is these more recent franchises. People aren't seeking Tom Cruise for new innovative things at this point in 2023. People are looking to Tom Cruise for those reoccurring action thriller roles.
That might be true, but I'm just saying $11.5 billion worldwide.
No, I am not debating that at all.
Let me interject that.
I get kind of what she's saying, but she hasn't had a flop.
Yeah, she's got a point. However, you know, you can't say that people aren't looking for Tom Cruise for new and interesting things when obviously nobody's going to the theater for new and interesting things at the moment.
I guess that's fair.
You know, everything is IP. Everything is a sequel. Everything
he can pull a Jennifer Lawrence and get naked.
She gets naked?
Spoiler alert.
Oh, I'm going to go see that.
Anyway, moving on.
But I mean, you can't say that it's the franchises that are sustaining his career because he didn't actually put out a film in 2019, 2020, or 2021. So his first movie back post-pandemic just happened to be Top Gun and Mission Impossible, which, yes, are franchises.
He held those.
Now, but...
And that's an important note is that he said, I'm not going to pull that out. We're not going to do it digital, which is what everybody wanted to do at the time, is drop that on digital. And he said, no, Maverick is for movie theaters, period. And they came back, and it was the biggest hit of the year. Massive. Mm-hmm. Massive.
And I actually liked that one. It was good.
Let's go back on topic. We'll come back to your franchise arguments. But first time you remember seeing Tom Cruise, do you guys remember? I remember... it was when he slid across the floor in his underwear in the 80s to rep Bob Seger in Risky Business.
I think for me, it's Labyrinth.
Oh, that's a fun pick. Interesting. Troy, what do you got?
Is he in Labyrinth or you mean Legend?
Legend. Yes, not Labyrinth.
Legend. That's what I meant. Sorry, I got my L's confused.
It's all good. I think mine was actually Color of Money. It was the first time I saw him.
It's a great movie, too.
And then once
too.
I went to Color of Money, then I was old enough to see Top Gun and Cocktail in that same year, and then went back and found Legend on some kind of cable service at the time.
You know what I think it was for me, actually, my first encounter with him that I probably can recall? It's probably The Outsiders, because I think I remember watching
that
in school.
No, in school, yeah. I could see that.
Yeah, we read the books and watched it in school.
All right, I was about to
say. I've watched a lot of Tom Cruise movies. I know you don't think that, but I really have.
All right. Well, no, I'm just saying your earliest exposure would have been Outsiders, and I forgot that sometimes in school they make you read that book.
Mm-hmm. And I was also young, so that movie, I mean, was already like 10 years old at that point. It was an old movie.
It was older than that.
I feel old.
When I was born, it was 10 years old or 9 years old.
That's right. That's why, so it was that's older why it would than have been that.
20 years old by the mm-hmm. time you would have seen it in school.
Oh, I see your point. Yes. Yeah.
You guys are fascinating. Everybody's just like basically yelling at each other.
We're all fucking tired. We can't think.
Tom Cruise brings out the fighting.
I don't know about you,
people.
But Wapner. Wapner's on a five.
So, okay, put it out there. Are you a fan or were you ever? If just tell me where you're at. Like, are you a fan currently? And if not, were you ever and why? And if you are a fan, why? Troy?
There hasn't been, I'm just like going back to like all the things he's been in, and there hasn't been anything that's really stood out as like, man, this really stunk. You know, Vanilla Sky might be the closest thing to a stinker, but I actually enjoyed the film. But most of his movies are just, they're good, right? Like Minority Report, War of the Worlds, The Last Samurai, Magnolia, Eyes Wide Shut is a little bit different. The Firm, Few Good Men, Far and Away, Days of Thunder, all of these are good films. So it's like, it's hard not to like him because all of the movies are entertaining movies. And that's really at the end of the day, all I care about. Like, I don't care who's in the movie. I don't care what you believe in. It's the same thing I feel about football. I don't care if you're doing echinacea or whatever the hell Rodgers was involved with. I pay for someone to win football games. I pay for an actor to do a good job in the movie. If I'm entertained, I don't give two rats ass about whatever else happens outside of that silver screen.
I'm waiting for Amanda because I'm going to brighten up whatever she says.
I'm trying to let everyone else go because I feel like you guys threw me on the hot seat.
We're not going to have negativity go last. No way.
Yeah, no.
It's just like when you write a letter to an employee. Now. It's like positive, negative, positive.
So what I'll say is that... Okay, so there's probably three things here. Oh, one, boy. I'm not a fan of him as a person. Two, I'm not a fan of his as an actor. However, the stipulation to number two, so 2A, is that I think he is incredibly overrated. And that's what irritates me so much about him because I've... very seldom felt like he was a great or exceptional actor. I've said this probably 3 million times. If you guys paid me a penny for every time I said it, I would be rich and I wouldn't be doing this podcast with you. I'd be doing it with Jason Bateman. But
wouldn't that be
sweet? I know,
sweet?
Right? But it comes down to, for me, a lot of the frustration is like, to me, he's not a great actor. He's a great stuntman. That's it.
Okay.
And he's three? An okay actor. That's my, it's 2A. So it's the three things, but.
Okay. Well, the first one, you don't like him. Take Scientology out of it because we're going to talk about that shortly.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything else you don't like about him? Or is it just the religion thing?
It's the religion and like, you know, just what you hear about his relationships and things like that. But mostly just the Scientology that bothers me. For him as a person.
Okay. John, what do you got?
I'm going to go with I'm mostly a fan of him on the screen. I don't care about who he is. I don't want to care about who he is. I can say the times that I've listened to him on a podcast or in an interview, the way he talks about how much he loves movies and the kind of things he does for movies. And there is a definite engagement there that is above and beyond the normal human being's ability to work within the movie system. So I do appreciate him for the amount of love that he puts into the art. It is something that I think is commendable for him, and his willingness to kind of poke fun at himself or at least dress himself down in some of the movies that he's done is also appreciated.
So I'm a fan. I like Tom Cruise. I think Tom Cruise, I don't know any other actor who seems to enjoy making movies more than Tom Cruise. I just don't. I do think he's a bit of an enigma. When you listen to him do an interview, it is painfully obvious how cautious he is about saying anything that's not specifically related to the film that he's promoting. But I would also say that's most actors today. And also, he got bit by his couch on Oprah moment so hard. Why would you ever get personal again? You know what I mean? I mean, to be perfectly honest, I didn't think that that moment was so bad and people made this big deal out of it. And it really kind of affected his career. So if I was him, I would never talk to anybody about my personal life ever again. So I kind of get that. You know, the religion thing will come back to and shortly. But in terms of movies, you know, I realize that he's been the Mission Impossible franchise, and he did another Top Gun movie, and he did two Jack Reacher movies. That's the extent of his franchise work. That's it. Everything else was single movies across the board.
And we should point out, like, by the time Dead Reckoning finishes in 2024, the Mission Impossible franchise will have spanned almost 30 years and bring in well over $4 billion worldwide.
Yeah.
So name another actor that's able to do 30 years worth of work and bring in $4 billion for a studio.
Harrison Ford.
That's why he's a movie star.
Harrison Ford.
Harrison Ford would probably be the closest, yeah.
But he's been a movie star consistently every decade since the 80s. You know, Top Gun, The Color of Money, Rain Man, A Few Good Men, Vanilla Sky, even that made money. That made $100 million, and that movie sucked. The Last Samurai is a great movie that nobody ever talks about. You know, he's got tons of quality films, and I know Amanda loves to focus on the stunts. He's a great stunt man. But what he is he's a movie star. He's a Clark Gable. He's a Cary Grant. He's a Paul Newman. He's one of these guys where they don't really play different roles, but they are the guy that you need them to be on the screen. That's who they are. That's what a movie star used to be. It's not really anymore. But the actors that do it well and do it for a long time typically play the same guy on the screen. Harrison Ford, I love Harrison Ford. He's not really that varied from role to role. He might have a couple, Mosquito Coast and things like that, but Tom Cruise has a couple. Tropic Thunder, Born on the 4th of July, Rain Man, I would say, is a different role for him. And he's done various works of art that he just doesn't do anymore. Now, why he stopped doing them is probably because people stopped going to see them, and he seems to be really, really smart about the moment of the business, like where the moment is currently for the movie business. And I think that's why you don't see him doing those as much, because he sees that they're not as profitable as they used to be. But I think he's talented. I don't think he's a great actor, but he's a good actor and a great movie star.
The interesting thing, though, is that he's never won an Academy Award.
No, I think he's been nominated like three times.
Four with Top Gun this past year.
Well, yeah, I mean, for acting, I think it's like three times.
Yeah. Born on the 4th of July, Jerry Maguire, Magnolia, and then just most recent one for Maverick.
Yeah, Jerry Maguire is another great movie. Magnolia, not a big fan.
4th of July is a great movie.
It is. Magnolia is a great performance. I mean, he gets a, you know, respect that bleep. It's a great performance. I don't like the movie that much because I just think I'm not a big Paul Thomas Anderson fan, but it's a good movie. And Tropic Thunder is way outside of his comfort zone. And there he is, shaking his ass, being the worst producer in Hollywood.
And still talking about making a second one currently.
Yeah. I don't know if I think you should just let things go. I don't know if you're going to do a...
We definitely don't need a second Tropic Thunder, but the fact that people still are asking for one is just like, Top Gun 2 worked.
Good luck. Good luck.
They're talking about it. That's all I'm saying. They're talking about it.
All right. So give me your best example performance-wise of your personal opinion of Tom Cruise, John.
I think my best example would have to be Born on the 4th of July. He did something that was so raw, so engaging, so evolutionary as far as a character is concerned from beginning to end, that you went on a journey with it. So when I think about his best performance, it is Born on the 4th of July. When I think about his second best performance, it's Tropic Thunder, because that's the one where when he did that character, it really, for me at least, and I know, and I feel like a lot of people agree with this sentiment, but it really re-engaged people's love for him, because it was so far outside of his normal, mm-hmm. that when you saw him do something like that, you were like, okay, he is capable of so much more and he is willing to do so much more. And it's okay that we can now let go of that joke of like him jumping up and down on Oprah's couch. Like those are all the reasons why I love that performance in Tropic Thunder, because it was my way of getting past the idiocy of that. And he has every right to be guarded about his life because of what that moment did to him. The same sort of thing happened to Brendan Fraser at one of the award shows when he was laughing at a joke and clapping. Like, people made a big joke about him clapping and what he looked like. And, you know, that was the beginning of the end, or that was this, you know, during the spiral of losing Brendan Fraser.
I mean, it can affect you, especially when you've been a movie star your whole life and that's all you love, really. You know, when the world stops loving you because you got really excited about somebody you're with. I don't care how weird it was, and it was definitely weird. I'm not taking that away.
Right.
But, hey, you know, I do, you know, when it comes to the guy himself, do I think he kind of forces it? Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I don't think you're seeing a genuine Tom Cruise. I don't know if we ever really see a genuine Tom Cruise, but I do think when he's at work, he loves what he does. And what I always tell people who say, "Wow, you know, he's probably a big wackadoo, crazy lunatic behind the camera." People that have worked with him and haven't worked with him in years still say he's a consummate professional and he loves making movies more than anybody else on that set. Like, people that worked with him years ago, people that work with him now, people keep saying this over and over, film from film to film to film. So to me, it's hard to believe that that's not the case when so many people just keep saying it. And I know even when he was not the megastar, when he, you know, kind of took that slope after the couch incident, people were still saying nobody loves making movies like Tom Cruise. Like, they've always said it. That's just who the guy is. If he's not, you know, showing his cards personally, do we need that? Like, why do I care? I don't really need to know your personal life. I've never really cared about any movie star's personal life, except Kurt Russell, because I want him to be my daddy. Don't judge. Like, adoptive.
Not quite sure how to take
adoptive.
That.
Adoptive.
Okay. Adoptive. Okay. All right.
Or maybe, we'll see what he's open to.
I don't know. You've complimented his appearance quite a bit.
Let's see. Can I call you daddy. Captain Ron? Oh, that would be sweet. Anyway, moving on, because that's very uncomfortable. Anybody else's example? My example would be A Few Good Men. I think he went toe-to-toe with Jack Nicholson and stayed strong. And also, I feel like for a long time, he was doing roles where he was the cocky kind of, you know, cocksure guy. And here, he got the wind cut from under him. I mean, basically, Jessup went in there and humiliated him. And he did an excellent job keeping up with him. And then by the end of the movie, coming to the point where he could confront him. And that's a full evolution of a character in that movie. I don't care what anybody says. It's a full evolution of a character. And I think the fact that he stood to Jack Nicholson in probably one of Jack Nicholson's best performances is impressive as hell.
Yeah, I mean, I probably came in like, he's the fun guy, right? So it's like between Cocktail and Top Gun, those were probably the two intro movies to him. But I really started to really like him as you move into Days of Thunder and Far and Away and A Few Good Men in the Firm, right? Mm. That early 90s work is just cinematic gold. I mean, I'm rooting for Cole Trickle, and then I get in the accident and you're just like, man, what's going to happen? And Far and Away, like, I talk about claiming territory to this day from that sequence when they like run out on the horse and plant the flag in the land.
Oh, wow.
You know, and it's just, yeah, there's just so many references back to those movies, and they're all Tom Cruise movies at the end of the day.
All right, Amanda, give us your best Tom Cruise performance, or the one that illustrates your opinion of him, I should say.
Well, that's tough. I'm going to be much more optimistic and positive here. And
you
I'll tell
you.
You what.
It's your opinion. You.
Well, she can't say Legend because he's kind of weird in Legend and like a fairy and stuff.
How about Labyrinth? You want to do Labyrinth? Because he's not in that one.
Probably my favorite performance of him would have been from A Few Good Men also. But on the other hand, there's also, I have one franchise that kind of gives him both sides, where one, he's really great. And then in the sequel, it's like, why are we here?
Which one's that?
And that's Jack Reacher.
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah.
Yeah. My thing with him typically comes down to feeling like his emotion is forced. And that's the part that bothers me. I feel like he is.
I don't disagree with you on that. I really don't.
He's often just very blanked. And like, even though he's supposed to have a ton of emotion, I never feel it. He never makes me feel like it's real. Like, I always just feel like, okay, it's Tom Cruise pretending to be sad.
You need that Xenu rage.
Pretending. I just need something. It's almost like you can just feel the lack of authenticity in it. And I think that's what bothers me when it comes to him as an actor. Because do I think that he's an enjoyable on-screen action hero or whatever? Yeah, absolutely. Like, he's great at engaging us with what he's doing on the screen when he's moving. But when he's more stagnant and he's delivering an emotional performance, it's almost always lackluster for me.
I mean, I will say this, okay? I do think the last decade, he hasn't done as well as an actor as he did previously. Maybe he's putting too much into the stunt. I thought he was a much better actor when he was younger. I don't know if that's because he's putting too much into the action portion of it or not. But on the same token, you know, there are exceptions. Edge of Tomorrow, he plays an absolute coward. He's like a big whiny baby in that one. And I thought it was a fantastic job on his part.
I like that one.
Because he definitely played against type, his own type.
To kind of mirror what some of the things that Amanda said is that the times in which I believe him the most is when he's kind of a smarmy, kind of not a great person. And I'm like, all right, I believe he can do that. He can pull that out whenever he wants. And he does that well in Collateral. He does that well in the beginning of Edge of Tomorrow, where he's kind of that coward character. The thing
Mission
is that
Impossible.
Well, okay, let's back up here. He's not a smarmy character in Mission Impossible, but what I do like about his character is the subtle changes that he has gone through over the years. Because, you know, that character of Ethan Hunt has grown. That character of Ethan Hunt has gone from like, I'm going to do the craziest shit I can come up with to when, okay, then you climb. And he's like, I do what now? Then you climb. And he's always looking like, I can't believe I'm about to do this next thing as far as in these roles. Mm-hmm. And like Simon Pegg's character is like, yeah, you know, you could do whatever you want. You're Ethan Hunt. And he's just taking a beat going, why are you offering my body up to the gods like this? You know, you kind of get those looks on his face where he doesn't believe he's able to do the impossible thing he's supposed to be doing. Mm-hmm. And I do enjoy those small little moments in the movies.
Can I make a confession?
As long as it's not about something illegal.
It might be, depending on how big of a Tom Cruise fan you are.
Okay.
But I might have to go back to Amanda's point about blockbuster side of things and franchise type of things, because I have not seen a Tom Cruise movie since Tropic Thunder that wasn't Mission Impossible or Top Gun.
I said the last decade. I will concede the last decade.
The only one that came out in that time was The Mummy. And let's be honest, that wasn't a great one for him either.
There was Rock of Ages, Jack Reacher, Oblivion, Edge of Tomorrow, Jack Reacher 2, The Mummy, American Made.
Rock of Ages was not his movie, I will say. He just guest starred, basically.
He was just in it.
Yeah, he was a supporting character, so that's not really a Tom Cruise movie.
But I haven't seen any of those.
Okay.
I personally have not seen any of those. I don't know. And honestly, I don't know why. I mean, Oblivion and Edge of Tomorrow both looked like they were ones I was going to watch at the time.
You haven't seen Oblivion or Edge of Tomorrow?
No.
Yeah, those are kind of up your alley. Yeah, they're
literally.
Edge of Tomorrow is good. I even like that one.
I realized
Oblivion is good.
Yeah, I was looking at my list of like tracking stuff and comparing it to the IMDb list, and I'm like, I have not seen these yet. It's
Night
on my
and
list.
Day is a blast.
Which one?
Night and Day.
Yeah, Night and Day is fun ish. I don't love it, but it could have been.
It's very okay. Blast,
that's all. Valkyrie was really good.
Valkyrie was very good. Like he makes good movies, man. That's what he does.
Yeah.
You know. Okay, so let's get into this. You can't talk about Tom Cruise and not bring it up, right? And I hate to do that because somebody's religion is their personal belief. But Scientology, like we said, it's goofy as shit. So do his personal beliefs that are well documented. But he doesn't ever tout that I've seen, except for that weird Matt Lauer interview where he thought he knew more than psychiatrists about drugs. Do his personal beliefs bother you? That's my question to you. For me personally, they bother me on a certain level in terms of, I wonder what the hell's going on in Scientology headquarters. Cause I don't think Tom Cruise is doing the weird shit. I think it's like the other members, because I grew up in a religious household. I think, if I'm just being honest, most organized religions have a control issue. I would say all of them. I don't know of any religion where I can not walk out of there going, and it's, I'm not an atheist. I just am not a fan of organized religion because I grew up in it, and I have studied multiple religions trying to understand certain things. And I feel like this is a piece of every religion. Now, Scientology, I don't really consider a real religion because I don't, a lot of what they believe just sounds like it was made up, because it was. I mean, I really didn't Ron Hubbard like just make this up and then people bought into it and he's like, oh shit, I guess I got a whole thing going on.
Yep. And I'm actually kind of surprised that his personal religion doesn't bother you more than it does.
Why? I mean,
because they are, Scientology at its core is, and they've stated
anti-psychiatry.
Health.
Yeah, I know.
And mental health in general. Absolutely.
Scientology like, does bother.
To a degree, like to a, but he has such a high ranking position in Scientology. He has the influence and ability to make change there or to denounce things.
That's
but
true.
He doesn't, A, because either he agrees with it, or B, he knows what happens if you do denounce it. And to me, it's like, well, isn't that equally just as bad if you continue to allow it to perpetuate and you defend it and you never, and you're literally not even allowed to say anything because they have it written that you, anybody who has controversy with Scientology is to have their property removed or be injured to any means necessary. And I'm paraphrasing, but essentially that's what it is.
Well, essentially what they do is they have like blackmail on everyone. And then
when they stalk, they harass, they've literally hurt people before. It's like, it's just part of the thing is to, at the core, they want to defend their, I'm not even going to say religion, their cult, to such a high degree that they will do literally whatever means is necessary. Now, they modified the language from the original rules that he wrote to state that the, I can't remember what the clause is, but it's something like, I can't remember what it's called. But anyway, they removed the language that specifies like injuring people, but from everything that other Scientologists who have come out of the practice have said, that the procedures, the practices never changed. It was just the wording that they changed in their legal rules. And they have such a tight rein on it that it's so hard for people to even know what it is that they're doing or what how they're operating. And they use that religion clause legally as a loophole.
I'll let Troy finish, then I'll answer what you were asking me.
Well, I was going to say that the Nexium, if you watch The Vow on HBO, it's the same thing, right? Nexium was like, blackmail you, take your property, you had to give yourself over to the guy and the organization. I mean, that is the definition of a cult. But at the same time, we're not here to talk about whether or not Scientology is a good thing or not. We're here to talk about, you know, is Tom Cruise being a Scientologist stopping you from going to watch him in a movie?
Right. And that's wrong.
And my answer, my answer to that is no. Like, whatever he does in his personal life, I don't care. As a moviegoer, I am paying to see somebody on the screen to do a job. And if they do the job well, there's more than just Tom Cruise that made that movie. There's the director, the writer, the camera people, the grips, the people that bring you the food, the makeup artists. I'm paying for all of those people that made art. I'm not paying for Tom Cruise. If Tom Cruise sucks in the movie, yeah, maybe everybody else suffers because in the movie doesn't make as much money. And then we can blame Tom Cruise and his wackadoo stuff. But as long as he's making good movies, who cares what he does in his free time? Who cares how many people he marries and divorces? That's his business.
Let me ask you this. Do you watch Chinatown?
Hang on.
No.
I'm never going to get to answer her question.
So I'm sorry. Just real quick, let me interrupt. And I'm just going to, I'll blanket statement this.
I saw Chinatown before I knew who Roman Polanski was, and I would never watch it again. That's my answer.
Why are you okay with one form of abuse and you're not okay with, and it doesn't bother you, someone's personal
Roman Polanski was convicted of a crime. Tom Cruise has never been convicted of any crime. That's my
answer.
That's
fair. But we're not in a court of law, so that doesn't really matter.
It matters to me. You're asking my opinion.
I wasn't asking you. I was asking Troy.
Oh, sorry.
He was the one who said that it didn't bother him, you know, his personal,
Troy's
what
never
he does
seen
in his
Chinatown.
Free time.
I'd be shocked if you've ever seen
it. I don't have an opinion. I've never seen Chinatown.
Jesus Christ.
Well, okay, so to sort of give an answer to that, when it comes to a lot of the documentaries on Scientology, a lot of the found footage on Scientology, a lot of everything that's available, you see more of John Travolta than you ever see of Tom Cruise. Tom Cruise is, I think maybe once or twice you've seen him on stage do something with Scientology. But at this point, I'd be hard pressed to believe that he's anything other than a figurehead as far as, or like a puppet for them, or a draw for them to bring in more members at this point. He would have to actually be on stage whipping somebody for the fun of it, eating a baby, and probably shitting on a freaking puppy for me to be like, okay, maybe there's a problem with him.
That was oddly specific.
Maybe there's a problem with him, but take Catholicism. Am I going to sit there and go after every person, including myself, for being Catholic, considering what the priests have done or are being accused of? That would be kind of bad, right? That would be not really. I would be selling out absolutely. Not really selling out, but I would be hurting a lot of people who had nothing to do with the bad actors. Sure, the bad actors of Scientology happen to be the heads of Scientology, but it doesn't mean that the people who are off to the side or in the orbit of are equally as culpable as the people in the center of it.
Yeah, I would take it another step further would be...
Can I answer this? Like, hang on. No, she asked the question like 20 minutes ago, and I still haven't been able to answer it because you guys bitches keep cutting me off. So you're going to shut up and you're going to let me finish. Goddamn. So what I was going to say when she asked, how can I still be okay, even though that they are so anti-mental health, is I don't care. I don't care. I don't care. If I held that standard for everyone, I wouldn't be friends with hardly anyone, because I feel like so many people are in organized religions that they all have people that have done horrible things in the name of God, every single one of them, or in the name of whatever their religion believes, even atheists in the name of atheism have done horrible things in their own way. So to hold someone accountable for actions they have not taken is not fair in any way, shape, or form, in my opinion. And I believe that until he does something that is criminal, that is hell, you know, then I'm not going to have that affect the movies. Now, could he make a difference in Scientology? Absolutely. Is he going to? No. I think what John said is very, very accurate. He's a figurehead, and he's probably like a CEO of a company. Well, not even a CEO, because he's not in charge of it, but somebody who's high up in a company who has no idea what's going on because he's too busy living his own life, and he barely pays any attention, and he seems like, you know, he's very shrouded from all of the things that actually happen. That's what I think happens. And maybe they have so much dirt on him, but I'm sorry. Now to you, Troy.
It's like a board member, right? The board member comes in for the board meeting. I get the pack of information for the last quarter, and all I know about is what's on this deck. I don't know anything else besides what's in this PowerPoint that goes on at the company on a regular basis, because this is all the information I'm given as a board member. I mean, if anything, you should be yelled at for sleeping with John Travolta's wife and Jerry Maguire, right? When he did Kelly Preston up against the bookcase. That's got to be something wrong with Scientology. I don't know.
I don't think so. I think that was a movie.
Because it's also a movie, so it doesn't matter. Right?
I don't care for him as a person overall. I don't know how involved he is with his kid's life. Like, I don't actually see him with his kids. I know that's kind of, some people say he's not really involved. I don't know. No one really knows. So everybody's just talking. I know there's a lot of stuff with Katie Holmes. There's a lot of personal stuff. Like, everything I've heard personally from him as a person is not something I'm going to hang out with. I love movies. When it comes to movies, he makes good movies. That's what I care about. As long as he's not convicted of any crime, that's going to change things for me.
It's the same thing. Like, I'm not hanging out with Dan Caffey on a regular basis because I don't think Dan Caffey's a great person, but Chick-fil-A still makes a damn good chicken sandwich, right?
Can't get Bud Light on Sunday, though.
Yeah, Bud Light still makes good beer. Hobby Lobby still makes wireframes.
Easy. Bud Light
doesn't make good beer.
But I kind of want to buy it on principle now, but... Yeah. I don't
Second
wouldn't
of
drink
all,
it.
I'm aligned with what you guys are saying, but I think the thing that's getting missed here is you guys are making these presumptions that he doesn't have any information or that he's not, you know, head in the company or the company in the cult, in the religion, in Scientology, sort of. Most religions are. But for him, he is very high up.
He
has absolutely done some pretty crazy things. He's even offered to physically harm and beat the shit out of people.
I don't.
For even some of his colleagues. No, it's on record.
You'll have to send me the proof. I don't
Aaron
know that.
Aaron physically threatens to harm and beat the shit out of people if they ruin his camping weekend. I've been there.
That's true.
And you're right, Aaron, that there's nothing concrete that, because Tom Cruise is, I will give him credit for this, he is very smart, because he never, since all of that crap happened back, when was that, like 90s, early 2000s or whatever, since then he has kept everything about Scientology very low key. The most he said is like, it's a beautiful religion, it's everything I have is because of Scientology and things like that. Other than that, he keeps everything pretty quiet and hush hush about it. But one of the allegations is that because his daughter
don't do allegations, because they have so many freaking lawyers, I'm not getting in that. So nothing that isn't confirmed and proven.
I just said it's an allegation. I didn't say it was confirmed or proven though. When you say it's an allegation, you're talking about the speculation that others have. I didn't say this was my speculation. Mm-hmm. But the allegations are that because she would be considered a suppressive person, Katie Holmes, then that would link her to Surrey. And that's where the issue could be. But there were reports of him not seeing her for over a year at times. Could be because of his working schedule.
Guy works
and things
a year
like
at
that.
A time.
Who knows?
Yeah, we don't know. So, a lot of people make a lot of assumptions. And here's the other thing that I would add to
I'm just pointing about something that you mentioned.
I understand. But I also would say, like, I have met, because of the podcast and a lot of we've met a ton of people in Hollywood, and I can count on two hands how many are nice people. Like, there's so much narcissism and just a problem, an oversaturation of ego in Hollywood, because they're constantly told that we love them. They're constantly told you're the best. There's nobody better. You're the thing that keeps us up at night. Like, we just think of you all the time. You're the dream. And when you get that kind of adoration constantly for decades and decades, I don't know what your ego would be. I'm sure it's through the roof. And a lot of Hollywood is like that. I'm sorry, never meet your heroes. There's a reason why they have that saying. This is interesting.
Taking the personal stuff aside,
yeah.
I have a lot of respect for Tom Cruise when it comes to the movie industry specifically.
Guy fights for it.
We definitely, you know, gave him credit when it came out, but his fight for movie theaters, which was mentioned earlier too, but that gives me respect for him in that capacity. Anybody who defends the industry that they work in to that level and uses their position of power and influence for the benefit of that in a good way, you know, it's hard not to give somebody credit for that.
So you're giving him credit because he fought for movie theaters and used his power of influence for something that he loves, but you're going to chastise him for using his power and something that he loves to make Scientology better.
No, it's just the fact that he is involved with Scientology and accepts and does not denounce the things that they do and are responsible for. To me, I don't care if you maintain your alignment with a religion as long as you're willing to call out the issues that exist within your religion. Those are two very different things. One is saying, oh, no, there's no problems. Everything is good. I'm aligned with it. You know, whatever happens, you know, YOLO versus... Hey, I love my religion. I believe in God, or I believe in aliens. And
Isn't it Xenu? Xenu is like number one, right?
Or believe in nothing at all.
Yeah, regardless of what you believe in. And so I'll use Catholics for an example, because John mentioned them.
Oh, good. They love that.
John mentioned them. The fact that there are Catholics out there, even pastors, not pastors, priests who are out there and will denounce things that have occurred within their religion, priests abusing children and getting away with it, having that covered up by the organization,
Vatican.
Things like that. That, great. You've now publicly denounced the issues that are wrong within that organization. To me, that's very different than if you just don't say anything at all and you accept everything they do.
Maybe he can't say anything. Maybe he's held hostage.
Well, that's part of it. But yes, again, isn't that part of the problem?
They have blackmail, I'm sure. All right, moving on.
That's so part of the problem.
Why do audiences still seem to love him overall? Why do you think audiences still love Tom Cruise? We've just said everything up and down about the guy. Why do they still love him? So many movie stars to choose from, Troy, and they still choose Tom Cruise.
I don't think they choose Tom Cruise. I think they're choosing like you know, let's take John for an example, right? Living up in the mountains, his life wasn't super awesome for a long time for him. And now he's like back at his favorite movie theater and can go see things on the big screen. People just want an escape from their everyday suck on a regular basis. And if a Tom Cruise movie is coming out this summer, hey, we can go see a Tom Cruise movie this summer and get out of our suck because we know we're going to have a freaking good time by going to a Mission Impossible or a Top Gun or what have you.
Wouldn't that be because of Tom Cruise then? So they still love him then. They still love Tom Cruise.
I don't know if they love Tom Cruise. They're just like, hey,
You just said they would run out to a Tom Cruise. Hey, Tom Cruise got a movie.
I'm saying they would go to any movie. They just want to escape.
It's obviously not true.
The type of movies that he provides for the past decade that have been successful are the types of movies that are brainless. Like you don't
I don't agree with that. I don't agree with that at all.
You don't have to think on a very deep level.
That statement did not change.
I tried to make it more gentle and polite.
There's Fast and the Furious, and then there's a level up. Tom Cruise movies are a little bit higher than a Fast and the Furious movie.
Yeah, like he's not trying to go out into space just yet in a car, but you never know.
He did in Maverick.
Oh yeah, almost. You're right.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, to your point, I just think that people enjoy that they know they can rely on a fun action movie, which for the people, the audience that he's bringing in are the people who grew up with fun action machismo movies. So he knows his audience. He knows the pocket. He works well with it. And those movies, people know that they can rely on to be that comfort for them.
Which speaks directly to why the box office hasn't been so successful for things like Flash and Indiana Jones, because the pocket of that people that are looking for those types of movies are dwindling.
And those ones are so interconnected, and you have to track so much story and understand what's going on here or there. You know, what timeline are we on and all of that. These movies, Mission Impossible, Jack Reacher, here's a problem. We have a hump we've got to get over. We've got a climax. Like, it's a first, second, third act movie that's filled with action, that's engaging.
Can we slow down with the hump and climax talk?
We're going to get flagged for, we need to move on.
But I want to mention a couple listener thoughts on this. Like, what do you think about Tom Cruise, et cetera? A lot of various thoughts. Deb Thomas. All I see is his ego. I haven't watched anything he's made in the past couple of years, except maybe a rerun of Tropic Thunder. You know, if you made more of those kinds of films, I think I'd like him more. He just doesn't appeal to me. He's not relatable. I can't suspend my belief to get into his characters like I can with a superhero or John Wick. My God, I think I just said Keanu has more range than Cruise. That's for you, Amanda. So there you go. Jeff Carter. The man has put asses in seats for 40 years. Just put his name on a poster, puts asses in seats. Cold facts, period. It's true.
Fair. That's a man who drinks Bud Light.
Jeez.
Cold facts. It just made me think of Bud Light.
I can't tell if he just insulted him or not.
I don't know what the rules are.
I don't know. If he drinks it, then he's going to take it as a compliment, right?
I still don't get why that's a
unless he's a Coors Light guy, then he's going to take it very offensively.
Here you go, man. Darcy Beardsley. Loathe him ever since Scientology made him insane. Well, he's been in Scientology like forever. So.
Forever, for like 30, 40 years.
Ty Nelson, for all his craziness, I don't recall stories about him being difficult to work with or inappropriate behavior. So even though he's a bizarre guy, I get the feeling he'd be okay to get along with. On screen, he's a great movie star. He has a knack for picking mostly good projects. He's worked with many of the big name actors and directors. He has fun doing his stunts. What's not to like? I like it.
I very much hear from those responses one way or the other. People who really like him because they're looking at the movie side of it
sure. You
know, pretty solely and don't really care about the personal elements of it or are unbothered by it. And then the people who don't even seem to care about him as an actor because they're bothered by the personal elements.
Yep.
Which I think is such a representation of like this podcast group, the country, everything.
Well, lastly, this one makes me laugh. Nathan David, I don't care about his ego. He's not my friend. I don't care about his Scientology. He's not swaying my beliefs. I don't care if he jumps on couches. I'm not sitting on them. Dude makes great movies.
And I like that.
And is arguably the greatest action star of all time. Sign me up for anything he's in. I like that.
That was really funny.
That was funny.
I'm not sitting on it.
It's a true statement.
True.
Oh my God, that was funny. All right. Well, you can share your thoughts on this episode or anything else in our Facebook group. We've got reviews coming. Don't worry. Including Mission Impossible, Dead Reckoning, Part 1. You can find John's artwork on Insta and Twitter at @RJohnDraws. Amanda on Smirk and at Sink Into This. Troy at Troy Heinrichs and The Blacklist Exposed, which is wrapping up its final podcast with me. And I'm on Presenting Hitchcock as well. And we just watched every Alfred Hitchcock movie, so you can find that one. Now, the most impossible missions. These are the most impossible. We've all seen a bazillion movies and TV shows. Which one of anything, not just Mission Impossible movies, had the most impossible mission? And you can think however outside the box you want to on this. Troy?
Oh, this is an easy one for me. Fanboys break into Skywalker Ranch and steal episode 1 of Phantom Menace of Star Wars for their dying friend, especially because they had to take a detour through Iowa.
Okay. That's definitely...
And because who they have to get the schematics from, if you've seen the movie.
Yeah, damn near impossible.
Great cameo. I won't spoil it for you.
All right, John, most impossible mission.
That is a pretty good one. Yeah. The one that I think is the most impossible mission to be pulled off happens to be the bank heist in Ocean's 11. Because if you think about it, there are at least three things on that on their plan that involve people that are outside of their control. And with those three people being outside of their control and they're just planning on having it work out the right way. I know that if I made a plan that had three people that were completely outside of my control in the plan, I would have been in jail.
Yeah, that's
so that's why
you'd be very disappointed.
That's fair.
Right. That's why Mission Impossible. That's why not Mission Impossible. But that's why I think Ocean's 11 is the most impossible mission.
Also a really good pick.
Absolutely.
I don't remember what things involved other people for the mission itself. I'm going to have to rewatch that because I don't remember.
It was
anyhow.
It was the timing, the laser. There's a lot. Yeah, there were three things.
Julia Roberts. Because she wasn't on exactly on board at the time.
Yeah, it was pretty random. All right, Amanda, what'd you get?
You needed the guy they were stealing from to be like at the right place with the watch and everything and the codes changing.
Interesting. For me, and I hate to go back to the what is it called? The well? Mm-hmm. Go back to the same well or whatever the hell the saying is. But I'm going to go back to Fast and the Furious where they go to space in a car. I'm sorry, Troy. I don't need your debate. I don't need you to defend it. To me, it's ridiculous. It's impossible. Ludacris doesn't just go out into space in his car. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's just not possible.
It's literally in his name. It's ludicrous.
Okay, yeah, you could have gone like to any of the other
any movie,
that, any dead.
Yeah, could have been like,
the one where the rope happens to catch the wheel, so that way it can dangle them from it breaking the bridge.
Indiana Jones across the canyon in a car.
Jesus. Yeah.
Right. Or how about like taking a Bugatti or something and jumping it from one building to another building for absolutely no reason whatsoever.
What was the little submarine thing in Antarctica or whatever?
There was no little submarine. It was a big ass submarine.
That's the one where the Rock like used his foot to kick a torpedo.
And then doesn't he mount a torpedo at one point?
Yeah.
And
he does everything on a torpedo.
What we're saying, the entire franchise after like fifth movie forward?
Yeah, I think so.
Never mind dragging a giant safe behind two cars. Yeah.
That just happens to break it open.
And apparently just almost killed Jason Momoa. We didn't even know he was there.
Supposedly.
Right.
Retcon City.
Oh, Lord.
All right. So my most impossible, I have two. Technically, so
did you say impossible?
I almost said impossible. Yeah, my most impossible missions.
Do you have to go to the bathroom? Do you need a moment?
I'll get there.
Right?
Hang on. I'm good. All right. So
ew.
I have either. either
you guys didn't see where his hands
went. A very, very sincere one or an outlandish one. I'll let you guys choose which one you want to hear.
Let's go outlandish. I'm with it.
Okay. Outlandish is Armageddon. It's absolutely ridiculous that they're going to send deep core drillers to save us from an asteroid. Like, nothing about that makes any goddamn sense. They train them in like a day and a half, and somehow everything goes to shit, and they still make it happen. I mean, and we had to lose poor Bruce Willis and that whole thing. Just
let's be honest, horrible. McDonald's workers can't even get one day of training to learn how to make the fries.
Absolutely.
So how did they do
or
that?
You would be
incorrect because I got only one day of training.
Oh, good God!
And I worked at the fry station like a champ.
I bet you burnt them all. I bet you everybody came back through and said, these are too crispy.
Nope.
How about the ice cream machine? Can you go in and make sure those are
I certainly can. Yeah. I can make a perfect vanilla cone.
I want to throw in my sincere one, though. 12 Angry Men. Because if you ever see a 12 Angry Men, Henry Fonda has to change the minds of all 11 jurors to convince them that the defendant is innocent. And I don't think in this day and age you could ever accomplish that mission anymore.
I think O.J. Simpson proved that.
Oh, you just watched that whole thing, right?
I did. I did just watch the whole
Amanda
thing.
Amanda keeps texting us like, People versus OJ, she's watching the TV show and she's like, can you guys believe this? Can you believe this? Yeah, we were there. Yeah.
Yeah.
We watched that white Bronco go down the street live.
Yeah, we were all watching it. I can't believe
my crib or something.
The court system was like this. This is ridiculous. Yeah.
Yeah. I just listened to a case on 2020 where this poor kid gets accused of killing his mother at 14. And when they have absolutely no evidence of it, they have like all the evidence is kind of like circumstantial to a degree. They present nothing concrete to the jury. And then there's like three people in the jury who are like, you know, we don't think he did it because there's no way of proving all this stuff. And the rest of the people just pressured them into, hey, we want to go home. Just say guilty so we can all go home.
Wow. That's wild.
What the hell,
That's
man?
That's wild. But we need to move on. We're going to wrap this show up with reviews.
We're podcasting.
Yeah, yeah. All right. Now, Amanda and I are going to talk about a couple movies before we get to The Unseen, which Troy saw. But one of them is Mission Impossible, Dead Reckoning Part 1. And the other one is The Channel. And I got to mention before this, did you see that Superman Legacy just cast Nathan Fillion as Green Lantern?
I mean, of course I did. It's you have Nathan Fillion in the title.
I know. He's going to be Guy Gardner, who is one of the versions of Green Lantern. And then there's, Isabella Merced is going to play Hawkgirl. Eddie Gathegi is going to play Mr. Terrific. And Blacklist fans, hey, he was great in Blacklist. So I like Eddie Gathegi.
Oh, that's cool.
And if you didn't know, David Cornswet has been cast as Clark Kent. Rachel Brosnahan is Lois Lane. But what do you think about Nathan Fillion? That's really what we care about.
I'm on board for it. But you know what? I don't know the Green Lantern character well enough, nor do I know this version of the Green Lantern character. I do think it's interesting that they chose not the one, what is it, Hal Jordan, that they did with Ryan Reynolds. Mm-hmm. That was Hal Jordan, right?
Yeah, that was Hal Jordan.
Yep. Yeah. Thought that was interesting.
Well, I think it's interesting. It's James Gunn. So I feel like every time Nathan Fillion's in one of his big movies, it's a very small role. You know, it's not a big role. So I don't foresee him having a large part, honestly. But I also, everybody that's saying, hey, DC's rebooting, this feels like what they did with Justice League. You're jamming a bunch of heroes together in the same movie again. No concern? Nobody's concerned? We just give him a full pass because, you know, his name's James Gunn? Is that what we're doing now?
Pretty much.
Okay.
And you know what? I'm going to mention a call out from Zach Parkerson from The Gaming Outsider, who is recently on for Indiana Jones. He's obviously probably one of the biggest Green Lantern fans that you could find out there. And one of the things that he brought up to me was that this specific Green Lantern is not, you know, it's not the one that we're used to seeing, the Hal Jordan that we usually have come up, or even John Stewart. Mm-hmm. He said, considering they're the leads of the upcoming Lanterns TV show. I was like, oh, that is kind of interesting that they chose to go with a different version of the character, or a different character altogether.
Well, it's going to be a tied world. So
yeah,
the Green Lantern TV show, I mean, if it's going to tie in, then it would make sense. Unless Nathan Fillion's going to drop out of the rookie or whatever.
Mm.
I don't know what that deal is. Just worth mentioning,
that one's coming to a close.
Because we're both Nathan Fillion fans. It's nice that he finally got a what seems like it would be a big part, but I also don't see it lasting long. I figure he'll be killed off in like 5 minutes.
I don't know. If he gets killed off the way he did in Suicide Squad, I'm okay with it.
Okay.
Pretty great. At least that's funny.
That was pretty great. All right, let's get into our reviews. First one is The Channel. Releases July 14th on demand and in limited release. You can find Amanda's review on the website, hopefully, by the time you hear this.
Yes.
After their bank heist goes wrong, a desperate criminal, his out-of-control brother, and their motley crew of ex-Marines must escape New Orleans and the determined FBI agent who pursues them. And it stars Clayne Crawford from Lethal Weapon. We were big fans of that show until that just imploded. And Max
a fan of the show, just wish it got to stick around with him on it.
Yeah, absolutely. And Max Martini's also in it, and he's been in a thousand things. He's always that SEAL commander. You know, he's that guy. And it was written and directed by William Kaufman. And I gotta say, the trailer for this reminds me of a game series I used to play called Army of Two. It was a co-op game, but these guys are always kind of like they're mercs and they wear the same kinds of masks. These guys are bank robbers, obviously, so it's a little different. But is this an action thriller, family drama? How does this play out genre-wise?
A little bit of both. You spend most, I shouldn't say most, you probably spend the first act not knowing actually about some of the details that are in the synopsis. And so it kind of takes you through a couple directions depending on what you know about the story. Mm-hmm. And you very much so start with this where you're like, okay, this may be a very generic bank heist thriller type film. It quickly escalates beyond that, becomes incredibly vicious and like a military war zone. And so you're like, whoa, hold on a second. There's more to this picture here. You learn more about what's going on in their motivations, their history as they go on the run from the FBI, and also find themselves in a war with one of the largest gangsters in the area. Mm. So yeah, the story really unfolds into a couple different directions, but there is still that element of family there in a couple different ways, actually.
Now, would you say that the production is solid? Because I know this is kind of a lower budget action flick.
Honestly, you wouldn't really notice.
Really?
If you did,
looks good?
Yeah, it is really good. There's some really, really great, wonderfully crafted and choreographed action sequences where they integrate military, communication styles into it. So you really get to feel in a lot of ways like, hey, I'm there with them. And there was moments where I was like, this is really intense, really intense. There's some really brutal moments, and you'll see that particularly with one character. And the other thing that I'll call out is, so be prepared for the brutality, be mm-hmm. prepared for that. The only thing that I think had a little bit, you could see maybe lesser production, is the very beginning and a section towards the end in which it is like a memory recall, mm-hmm. but it's done from like a military perspective with the, you know, green lit night vision. So mm-hmm. that's the only thing that was like maybe questionable from a production standpoint.
So we've got two performances, and I like both of these actors, right? Because you've got Clayne Crawford and you've got Max Martini. Both are very, very intense actors for different reasons. And Clayne Crawford, the reason why I always loved him on Lethal Weapon is just because he was erratic and you couldn't really plan for whatever he was going to do because he was kind of like batshit nuts. Is that the same kind of character he's playing here? Is it reminiscent of Martin Riggs, or what do we got? Tell me about the performances.
Not at all.
Really?
You very much so get more of that character dynamic and Mick, who's played by Max Martini. Mm. So his character is the unpredictable one, the one who's willing to go to whatever lengths are necessary to achieve what he wants to achieve. He makes choices and decisions that impact his entire group without communicating with anyone. And Clayne Crawford's character, Jamie, is much more methodical, trying to be much more strategic. He's one who's, you know, he's very smart. He's trying to get the details, create like a crafted plan. And so he's not the impulsive one. And he very much struggles with going outside of what that looks like, the scope of the plan.
Okay. And so both solid actress. So this sounds a lot better than what I expected, to be perfectly honest. I just, this trailer came out of nowhere. And I know the screener kind of came out of nowhere, but it's two actors that I really, really dig. And I know you love Clayton Crawford. So is this one that took you by surprise with how good it is then?
You just never know what to expect based on a director that you haven't seen a ton of work from.
Sure.
And that's the only thing that kind of makes me wonder, you know, you go into it very cautiously optimistic is what I'll say. And because you never know what you're going to get, right? With indie films, you could have a low budget that has incredible production, incredible casting. And it's like, how did they pull this off?
Mm-hmm.
You have some other indie films where it's like, man, they would have such a phenomenal film if they had a better budget here. And so it can all just kind of vary. So yes, I went into this very cautiously optimistic, and I was very, not in a negative way, but I was very surprised. It just exceeded the expectations that I anticipated going into it with the presumption that, hey, I'm at least going to enjoy watching Clayton Crawford on the screen here.
Absolutely. So if $10 is the full price of admission, what do you give the channel?
$6.50.
Nice. So fun watch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
Excellent. Okay. Well, the next one. Oh, my God.
The big one.
Oh, my God. Mission Impossible, Dead Reckoning, Part 1.
So for anyone who's been living under a rock, we'll give you a little bit behind what this film is about. But Ethan Hunt, who's played by Tom Cruise, and the IMF team must track down a terrifying new weapon that threatens all of humanity if it falls into the wrong hands. Of course, it has to be dramatic. With control of the future and the fate of the world at stake, a deadly race around the globe begins. Confronted by a mysterious, all-powerful enemy, Ethan is forced to consider that nothing can matter more than the mission, not even the lives of those he cares about most. Someone's gonna die.
No spoilers, I promise, no spoilers.
We talked a lot about Tom Cruise at this point. My question is, does it live up? Does the cruise missile still got it?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I got to say, you said the race around the world, and I think he at least ran around half of it, because there are definitely multiple sprint scenes. He's just got to, I don't know if it's in the contract or what, but it's always there. It's, he does still have it. I mean, the age is starting to show a little bit in his face. You know, he's definitely getting up there in years a little bit. And I don't know, the Xenu magic is wearing off a little, but he's still got it. I mean, he's still charismatic as hell. I think he's given probably one of his best performances in this particular franchise. I don't mean overall, just in this franchise. And from start to finish in a movie that's like 2 hours and 45 minutes or something like that, nonstop. Like, this is one of the best paced action movies I've seen in a long time. Just fantastic pacing, absolutely thrilling. From it's probably my favorite Mission Impossible since the first one, but the first one I think is a pretty damn near perfect film. I'm sorry, I was just all over the place. To answer your question, Tom Cruise is great. He's doing what he does best. He's once again going to save movie theaters all by himself. Him and Barbie are just going to save the world. And I didn't mention this earlier. I should have mentioned this earlier. More props to him, because he's been out there trying to sell other movies and trying to get people to go to the theater and see other movies. You know, he started
to get people to watch Barbie.
Yes. He got the whole Barbieheimer thing going. He started saying, like, you know, go see Barbie, go see Indiana Jones, go see Oppenheimer, go see them both. You can see both the same weekend. You know, there's all of this stuff you can do to support movie theaters. And he's been out there promoting other projects. And how many other actors do that? He got it, people going, and then Margot Robbie got the go see them both the same weekend. I don't remember how it worked, but I know Tom Cruise got that ball rolling. Guy's going to save movie theaters.
Very cool of him. Yeah.
Hate him all you want. He loves movies, and he's great.
Give him credit for his movie theater support.
I will say, I will, to go to your earlier points about his stuntmanship.
I'm getting there. Hold on.
All right.
My next question is specifically about the outlandish stunts and the action sequences that typically riddle the Mission Impossible movies. So do we still have all of those great sequences, something new and inventive or crazy? What do we get in this one?
Yeah, and there are nonstop set pieces for sure. There's a train scene that is probably a half hour long, maybe. And it's there's a lot of different pieces to it. There's even, like, I don't know if it's intentional, but almost a loving nod to Uncharted 2. If you ever played that game, probably didn't, but it almost feels like a nod to it. Like, did you guys play this game? Because it feels like you played this game. And it's so well done and just masterfully so. It's just very, very impressive. There's a lot of intricacies to how the story unfolds. I don't think the plot is that deep, honestly.
Wait, hold on. What about stunts? We're getting off of the stunts.
Sorry. There's lots of stunts. Everybody's seen the one where he jumps the cliff and all that. I mean, that's been a big selling point to the movie. There's zero reason why Tom Cruise needed to do that, honestly. I don't think it necessarily adds.
Because he wanted to.
Yeah, he just wants to. That's the only reason I can see for him doing it. Honestly, if I'm the production company or Paramount Pictures, I'm like, no, Tom, I realize you're the guy that's going to sell this movie, but no, we need you alive. I don't care.
At what point do the insurance and production companies tell him no, man?
They have told him no.
You're too old. You're too old for this now.
Have you ever heard the Matt Damon story where he said he was talking to Tom Cruise about some of the stunts he did and how he did a certain stunt? Because how did an insurance come, or how did they actually do that? Because they shouldn't have allowed it. And Tom Cruise said, well, I went to my stunt guy and I said, I want to do this, this, and this. And my stunt guy said, no, we can't do this. So I got another stunt guy. That's the joke.
Yeah. Yeah, that's funny. Yeah.
So basically he just, he finds people that'll let him do this crazy nonsense. Wasn't necessary though. I don't think it really added to the movie. The movie was fantastic without seeing his face jumping a cliff. Cause you don't see his face jumping the cliff.
Mm-hmm. Ah, okay. All right. I see you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But there's a lot of car scenes. There's some fun chase scenes. Lots of stunts in cars. There's a fun bit where they're actually in a car chase in the tiniest Fiat, I think is what the car. I'm not a car guy.
That sounds right to me.
Where they're being chased around there. Obviously, we've got world travel. We've got Venice and Rome and everything else. So it's insane. The Alps. I mean, it's just like a James Bond movie, but a lot more fun.
It sounds fun, but is there a story and plot to it?
No, I gotta be honest. I mean, I can't tell you the plot for any one of these movies. I don't remember, except the first one, because that one was a pretty detailed plot. But this is intricate in a way. I will say this is probably the easiest one to follow, because a lot of these plots, I'm just like, what are you talking about? You're just trying to make this sound way more complicated than it needs to be. But this is basically, there is an AI that is basically becoming sentient. And there is a set, there is a key, basically it's two keys that make one key, that will directly unlock the control of that AI to whomever gets there first. And so the mission, should you choose to accept it or go see it, is to retrieve those keys before the other parties. And Isai Morales is the other party who plays Gabriel. He's the bad guy who's basically, I don't want to say anything.
I can't think of any mission more perfect for Tom Cruise than one that just involves a race.
Yeah, race against time, race against the world. Yep, that's all it is. You know, and he wins that every time, so don't bet against Cruise.
All right, last thing. So this is noted as a part one.
Uh-huh.
And given that, without any spoilers, does the ending leave you completely on a cliffhanger? Or does it give you some level of closure for this as a singular film?
I think, which this part is actually kind of phenomenal. So we've had three movies this summer that were literal one-parters, right?
Uh-huh.
Fast X, Spider-Verse, and this one. This is the only one that actually says part one on it.
Uh-huh.
And this is the most complete one that of the three.
Are you serious?
I swear to God.
I knew this was going to happen.
Yes, there's definitely more to do and everything else, but it feels like at the end, okay, I saw a complete movie. It didn't feel like, well, shit, I guess. I can't wait till next year or the year after, I guess, so I can see how this unfolds. It feels very, very complete. And you know, they introduce a new character, Haley Atwell's Grace, and also bring back, you know, the cast members from the past, you know, Ving Rhames is Luther and Simon Pegg's Benji and Rebecca Ferguson's Ilsa. Vanessa Kirby's the White Widow. We get Pom Clemente who plays Paris. You know, she's Mantis in the Guardians of the Galaxy movie. She's great, very badass. Mm. And again, Issa Morales is the bad guy and Gabriel. And Kittredge is back from the original movie, if you saw that one. So he's back in this. But I got to say, of all those names, Haley Atwell really finds her place in the franchise. And I hope she has if these movies keep going, she has a long future in it, because I think she was great. I mean, I love her to death to begin with, but yeah.
That's really, really cool to hear. I didn't realize there was so much connection back to the previous ones. Remind me, is the plan for them to conclude Mission Impossible after this next one?
Oh, he pulled a Vin Diesel. He said this going to be like a two-parter to wrap it up. And now he's doing press saying, yeah, I'd like to do these till I'm 80, like Harrison Ford. So, you know, who knows? I don't know. Nobody knows. It's all up to the crews at this point.
The cruise missile. All right. Well, if the full price of admission were $10, which we know it's more than that, what would you pay for Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part 1? Such a lengthy title.
It's a very lengthy title, but at least it tells you there's a Part 1, even though it actually ends quite well. $9.
Wow.
Absolutely loved it. And Christopher McQuarrie, who has become Tom Cruise's right-hand director, I guess. He's done several films with him. I love his work. He's a great writer. He's very good at writing taut, tense films. I am so impressed with the work he did here, because I'm telling you, even in a very good action movie, if it's 2 hours and 45 minutes, at least a couple of times, I'm checking my watch, wondering, is this thing close to ending? Not a second was wasted. This is one of the tightest action movies I've seen in a long time, editing-wise. Well done. Just very
phenomenal.
Well done.
Love it. I'm actually looking forward to watching it. I have a ticket already.
And the best part, if you miss plot details, it's not that important.
So you're telling me that I am able to go to the bathroom, refill my popcorn.
You won't want to.
Do all the things.
I didn't want to do any of those things. And I normally do at some point. I did not. I was willing to pee myself. Fully wetting.
Okay, maybe
willing
don't,
to
maybe
wet
don't
myself.
Go.
And Tom Cruise is getting old enough to where he might start. So they need to wrap these things up.
He's gonna start running around with like an adult diaper on, and you can just see like the lines in his pants.
Where'd Tom go? Oh, never mind. We saw him. We see the trail.
Oh man,
that's mean. Oh yeah, so I love it. Go see it. Definitely see it. See it. See it. And now let's go check in with Troy and the unseen that he saw.
That he saw.
Ironically. All right, so let's talk about The Unseen, Troy. That's a movie that's available on demand right now and stars R.J. Mitty, and it was written by Jennifer Goodman and directed by Vincent Shade. We actually know Jennifer quite well. We were at her last premiere for Conrad. She's up-and-coming writer/actress, multi-talented, and also has her own production studio, if I remember right.
Correct, yeah, Lakefront Pictures in Chicago. Pictures.
So it's awesome that she's getting out there and she's making the dream come true. And we're going to give her a fair review here. So Unseen is about a law student who finds himself in a twisted web of murder and deceit brought on by a dark force from his past. Troy, you went to the premiere. You met many of the cast, and we're actually going to have some interviews at the very, very end of the show here shortly. So tell us a bit about it. Like, what are we not hearing from that description? Like, what else is this movie about?
It's actually a lot. There was not much to go on prior to going to the premiere. So as we were talking to people on the red carpet, you're getting a little bit of pieces of what this movie's actually about and how it's all coming together. And what you really don't gather from just the log line of the film is that this movie's actually more than what is on the cover. So there's
the story is unseen?
It is unseen for a lot of the movie.
I'm proud of that.
It's a very classic tale of a situation that people have to like. I akin it to like a detective story. You're trying to uncover what happened at a particular event as this goes along, and as this is going along, there's this presence, this haunting that basically possesses R.J. Mitty's character, Tommy. And as this character is possessing Tommy, Tommy's trying to figure out what's really happening because he's losing time as these possessions are happening. So he's not really fully aware that he is being possessed. And when you find out why he's being possessed and what the murders are all about, that's where the big twist comes at the end. You kind of go, oh, and then it was, oh, and then it was like, oh, wow, that really just happened. So yeah, the ending is really where it pays off in the entire sequence of things. But yeah, it's basically a law student trying to get out from underneath the thumb of his father, make his own way in the law community as he prepares for the bar. And then all of this weird stuff starts happening from a paranormal perspective.
And in terms of the actual production, is this, I know it's a low budget film, but does it look solid?
Yeah. I mean, it was watchable, obviously. We know that number one, they started making this prior to the pandemic. So a lot of this was filmed during the pandemic, and obviously things had to be adjusted and shifted in order to meet certain union rules and things of that nature. There's also, obviously, you know, availability of actors and rewrites and things of that nature as you go through all the years to get this thing to a place where it can actually be visibly shown and picked up by a distribution company like Gravitas. So in watching the movie, I would say that the story is sound, right? I love the twist at the end. I think it was really, really well laid out and really well done when it actually happens. I think the acting is really great. R.J. Mitty, obviously, everybody knows him from Breaking Bad. He was Walter White Jr. And his performance there was great. So obviously he carries the film very well here as well. The challenge with the movie is that you can definitely tell it's not polished like an A-list, you know, big budget film would be, right? Mm-hmm. There's a lot of, you know, cut sequences. There's a lot of ADR work where it's the voiceover. But again, a lot of that's expected because it is a low budget movie. And I think for what Lakefront Pictures was able to do with the budget they had to put something together, it's actually a very watchable film, and you could sit down and by the end of it, you'd say, yeah, it was worth the time sitting down to watch the story to see what the big twist is at the end. Cause I think the twist is oof, like I did not see that coming. And just the dialogue that happens at the end is like savage.
Yeah. You said you were raving about the twist, even privately. So
yeah. I would say if you can, you could see where the scenes cut between the scenes. It's not like there's a music cue that kind of very slowly moves you through. It's not like there's a cutaway shot that transitions you into the next scene. It's very scene. So if you can get past that aspect of it, the story is great.
All right. So what would you give Unseen? $10 is the full price of admission. What would you give Unseen?
I gave it a 5.3 on my review, which is now up at thehollywoodoutsider.com.
5.3.
What?
You mean a 5.5?
Hey, it's the way the thing calculated. It says
5.3. Man, fix your math,
sir. It's we don't do 0.3.
This man just bragged about being able to make McDonald's fries with one day of training, but he can't do an average.
Why can't you play rules like everybody else? Why do you have to do it different? We're going to say it's 5.5. That's what we're saying. We're running up.
5.5, fine.
We're running up. All right. And now we're going to listen to some audio clips, right? Interviews. Do you want to introduce these? And remember, the next time you head to a theater and see Mission Impossible, of course, by Popcorn, but we're going to segue into these interviews and then we'll be heading out after that. So, Troy, do you want to introduce them?
Yeah. So, we were able to meet a few of the actors that were on set. Rebecca Kennedy obviously plays Millie. She's the thing, the demon, the possessor that happens. R.J. Mitty couldn't be there because he had a family emergency. But as we basically sat on the red carpet and was able to interview much of the cast that were present, along with Jennifer, the writer, and Vincent, who was the director. So just hope you enjoy these. It is a little bit spoilery. So if you're planning on watching the movie, maybe watch the movie first and then come back to these. But if you don't care one way or the other, then enjoy the conversation with the cast.
And we want to wish Jennifer all the best because she's a lovely person who's worked her ass off to make it in Hollywood. So good for her.
And this did release in theaters limited as well. So
that's awesome.
Yeah. Good for her.
Super cool.
Very, very happy for her. All right. Here you go. From the cast of Unseen.
Troy Heinrichs here from The Hollywood Outsider. We are at the Unseen movie premiere at AMC River East in Chicago. We are with Rebecca Kennedy, who is one of the stars of the new movie, The Unseen, which you can get on Apple TV and also on demand. It is out now, so make sure you go ahead and get it. Rebecca, this is exciting for you because this is the first time we can finally tell people who you are in the movie.
Yes, I play Millie, aka possibly the monster or the ghost or the thing that is coming back to haunt everyone.
What was it about the movie that drew you into becoming part of the cast in the first place when you saw the script?
Well, I love the character. She really has a wonderful journey of trying to find forgiveness, even though she is does come back and do some things that aren't great. I thought the idea of trying to find the way into forgiving someone that has really hurt you was really fascinating to me. And I loved that she was interesting and just her own being and unapologetic, even if people didn't quite get her. So I thought that was really interesting. And working with Jen and the team was incredible.
So now it's a supernatural, not really a scary movie, but it has jump scares. What about the genre excites you? Is this a genre that you would normally work in, or is this a first for you?
I normally do. I've done a lot of horror films, so definitely not a first. This is more of a psychological thriller than like straight horror, so that's always fun. And I have yet to be, I've played the villain. I played the villain in a film called Two Witches, but I have yet to be really the thing that was doing the haunting. So that was the first for me, so that was really fun. And I love horror movies in general.
And how was it working with RJ specifically?
Oh, he's wonderful. So generous, so kind, such a just a delight, really cares about making sure that everyone has good coverage and their fair time and preparation and making everyone feel like a team. So he's great.
I'm here with Ava Bianchi, who is one of the family members in this particular thing where RJ, who plays the lead, is being haunted from some memories of his past. Tell us a little bit about your character and what drew you to the movie in the first place.
Okay, well, I play Callie Olson. I'm the youngest member of the family, RJ's little sister. I would say I'm definitely more of a comedic relief element to this pretty heavy film. And I enjoy that. I think that's what I'm good at here. And I got involved with the film in, I think I was cast in about 2020. So this has been a project in the making because that was when, you know, everything shut down. So we were waiting and I'm glad that they were able, Jennifer and everyone was able to pull through and really make it happen.
What was your reaction when you found out who the thing, the monster, the scariness that's happening when it actually was revealed? What was your initial reaction?
I love the drama. I love the drama. I love plot twists, and this film definitely has a lot of it. So I was very shocked. I'm the kind of person, too, who is not, I kind of am talking. I talk during movies, and I was trying to keep it down and, you know, with everyone around. But definitely when I saw it on my own for the first time, I was very vocal and gasping dramatically. It'll take you for a whirlwind for sure.
Talking to Kimberly, who plays Olivia. She's a member of the law firm and kind of helps RJ get possessed. You guys shut down during COVID and then had to like finish the movie somehow. What was that all like for you as an actor, as a person who just wants to see the movie come out because it's such a great topic?
Definitely it was difficult sometimes, like with COVID, just, you know, of course, just the whole atmosphere of it, but everyone took care of each other. Of course, we're union production, so of course we had to go by union standards when it comes to taking safety precautions, but it was awesome. It was such a fun cast and crew, phenomenal team. I'm so grateful for the opportunity to be a part of it. RJ and I had so much fun behind the scenes, even though it's a horror and it's very serious. Lots of giggles, lots and lots of giggles, so yeah.
And what's the difference for you between working television and movies? Is it the same slog? Is it like one's better than the other, or they're both your babies?
Well, Troy, I'm used to film as well. I do indie, I do all of it, and even theater, yes! And, you know, I've done other TV shows, but I guess the big difference is just being with these people longer. I guess if you get more of a series regular role in TV, you're with them longer, but definitely in film, you're with them more and more, and it's weird shooting out of scenes when you know, like, the whole script, but otherwise, it's not too different. Yeah.
What was the feeling when you found out what the twist was and who you found out who the monster actually ended up being?
Ooh, you know, I was like, yes, I love a good twist, especially for a horror film. But yeah, I was shocked. I don't want to say too much. I know it's like already out, but I don't want to say too much.
I'm here with Jennifer Goodwin, who is the writer of this amazing script, her first ever full-length feature film.
Yes.
Finally got it done because you had to suffer through COVID and all that other fun stuff. So how are you feeling tonight, first of all?
Relieved, nervous, excited. You know, you never know what people are going to think. All the hard work that goes into it, now everyone's going to see it. And you're like, I hope they like it. I hope they're scared.
Now you get to do all of the fun, writing, producing, and you're acting in the film. Which one do you like more at this point after the career that you've had?
You know, I love the acting part. That's what I signed up for. Producing's great because I bring in my background from sales and relationship management. Writing is a good time, but every time you write something, it ends up changing 5,000,065 times anyway. So it's like after a point, you're just like, ugh, I don't want to write anymore. But you really, you know, it's really exciting to see what I wrote come to life and these characters come to life, and it's exciting.
And we're here at Lakefront Pictures, which is based here in Chicago. So to have the premiere in Chicago is amazing. The studio itself deals a lot with different topics around neurodivergence and autism. What of that did you put into this film in particular so that you could have that speak to the audience as they're watching it?
It's a great question. So RJ has cerebral palsy. And one of the things that I really like to capitalize is how having some type of what people might say is a setback really become a superpower. And I think that in my, you know, in my life, I've been able to surpass expectations that have been set for me. I'm on the side of the spectrum where I overdo it all. I talk too much. I try too hard. But that has really allowed me to channel my energy into creating something different, unique, and something like this, and raising money for it. And with RJ, the story isn't about him having cerebral palsy. That's not what this is about. This is a story that is about a guy who is trying to get the approval of his family and all of the obstacles that come in his way, including being haunted for choices that happened in his past and how that affected his livelihood. And you see how he maneuvers through life and his dynamics and his relationship because of his setbacks, but they end up really being his superpower and allowing him to strive forward.
Well, the good news is that the twists happened as the production went along, as you went through the COVID process to get this thing to the finish line. So now it's smooth sailing, but the big twist in the movie, we finally get to see it. We finally get to tell people about it, and you're going to be able to get to download it because it's out now.
Yes.
On Apple TV and video on demand. Make sure you go ahead and grab The Unseen as soon as you can. Jennifer is amazing in the movie, as always. And, of course, the script is fantastic.
Thank you so much for being here. I'm honored.
I'm here with Vincent Shade, who has probably the hardest job out of anybody on this movie because it started a long, long time ago in a pandemic, pre-pandemic, far, far away, because you had to go through the entire COVID process, Vincent. What was it like for you being a director through that experience?
Oh, wow. Yeah, the COVID process is a very interesting one. You got to be masked up. You got to be all disinfected all the time, you know. It definitely eats into time, but we were very fortunate enough to have a great first AD, Joshua Schilling. He kept us on time, you know, made sure that those processes were an organic part of filmmaking, you know. And we were actually, that first week, we were in a house where we kind of couldn't touch anything, so we had to full scrub up, you know, the entire time. So we're wearing the booties, the gloves, the masks, everything. So it became second nature after a couple of days, I think, for the cast and crew. And yeah, the only thing, the only problem it sometimes happens with the communication, because I'm Italian, so I use my arms a lot and my facial gestures. But yeah, they learned to see the intention through my eyes. You know, that performance, you know, that I'm looking for.
What got you into directing specifically? Like, what is it about film that excites you, and why this genre in particular?
Oh man, everything about film excites me. You know, I live and breathe it every day. You know, I bathe in film. I absolutely love it. I've loved it ever since I was young. You know, my favorite movie is the 1989 Batman, so I was super excited to see Keaton's return recently. But this genre in particular, my favorite filmmaker is Hitchcock, and I learn a lot what I learned from him. I went to school for this, and I study it every day. So Hitchcock's mastery of suspense and the horror element is something I always try to, you know, emulate in everything. And this movie in particular, suspense is a very huge part of the storytelling. So we do some Hitchcockian tricks in it. We borrow from some other modern filmmakers as well. But yeah, I just absolutely love it. You know, I feel like I was born to be on set.
The twist at the end of the movie.
Yeah.
when you read the script, did you feel like it was earned? Did you feel like, wow, I can't believe this happened? Or did you know the whole time?
Oh, no. I definitely was surprised at the end, you know. Definitely a nice little twist at the end. I was hoping for something that grandiose, and it was like not just one twist. It was one, two, three at the very end, and it stuck the landing. I said, oh, man, this is the script for me. I can't wait to direct this thing. You know, it was very, very exciting.
Awesome. Well, Vincent, so nice to talk to you here. We are at the Unseen Movie Premiere at AMC River East in Chicago. You're going to be able to download it immediately after hearing this because it is out now, Apple TV and also Video On Demand. Go buy it. Make sure you check out The Unseen and Vincent's great work. And hopefully we'll talk soon.
It's an honor. Thank you so much.